This morning I talked about integration, said quite a lot, although inevitably there's lots of things that I didn't even touch on. For instance, I don't think I mentioned the word ethics, which some might say is a very important aspect of integration, a very helpful tool. Working with precepts really helps integration. In a way, the precepts describe how someone who was really deeply integrated would naturally act. So when we give ourselves that training, we keep bumping into the fact, all those places where we're not fully aware, where we have aspects of ourselves pulling in different directions, and it makes us much more conscious of that. And by then working with those things, there's a whole process of integration that goes on. I did, in a way, talk about Bhante's teaching of horizontal and vertical integration. But again, I didn't really say anything about dhyana. I talked about vertical integration more in terms of opening to the adhisthana, to the influence of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, of our teachers, our lineage of inspiration. But now I want to say a little bit, start a bit of a discourse about motivation, which is a crucial aspect of the whole process of integrating ourselves. In the long run, our integration will be as good as our motivation is, probably. No motivation. Well, actually, no motivation, no nothing, really. That's what it comes down to. No motivation, then it will be sanskaras as usual. Just continuing whatever we've been conditioned to, whatever our previous karma has set up for us, that will all just keep rolling along. And I think sometimes we imagine somehow it's just going to change by itself, but why would it? It just, if anything, it just gathers momentum, because those ruts, those neural pathways, those whatever it is, they just keep getting stronger as we keep repeating them. So, our motivation is crucial, and there are different aspects to motivation, which I'm sure I'll come back to during the retreat. So we can be motivated by what I talked about this morning, that sort of, what would you call it? That heart wish is one description for it. And that's when we manage to tap in to something deeper in ourselves, and we discover something in us which really wants to know, which really wants to understand, or which really wants to be free, or really wants to love and be loved, or which really longs for beauty, or really longs to be at peace, for all that anxiety and worry and rage and so on, just to all settle and just to be completely at peace, or to be deeply, deeply relaxed and at ease. Or part of us which longs for something, for real joy, real happiness and really uplifting. So if we can tap in to that, then that's a very strong source of motivation. And then there are all the sources of inspiration from the Buddha, his life, his example, his teaching, Dharma study, etc. Spiritual friendship, the people that we've met or that we know about who've inspired us. Whatever it may be, which we need to keep in touch with. I remember years ago, when I was a chair of the centre, Bante would talk. At one stage, he started talking about the most important thing for a chair of a centre to do was to guard the sources of inspiration. So if nobody else did, if everything was getting a bit sort of superficial and a bit, Dharma light, L-I-T-E, then, at least that person, they would keep in touch with the sources of inspiration. But that's not just true of centre chairs, that's true of all of us. That's true of anyone who wants to live a more fulfilling life, from a Dharma point of view. We have to guard our sources of inspiration. And then the third way of I'm sure I could add to the list if I thought for a few minutes, a third way of motivating ourselves is just by looking at our existential situation. Just by taking our noses away from our computers, actually kind of looking up out of our life a little bit and from being lost in all that we're trying to do, and just take a look at what the real situation is. And when we do that, from a Dharma point of view, we find the, amongst other things, these four reminders, as they're called in the morning puja. They're sometimes called the four things which turn your mind to the Dharma. In other words, which motivate you to practice the Dharma. And you'll remember the morning puja starts, "This human birth is precious, an opportunity to awaken." So the first one is just to, in a way, to realise that we have a precious opportunity. But this body is impermanent. So the second one is to realise that this precious opportunity is a limited offer. It's not going to be around indefinitely. So, and then it goes on to look at actions and their consequences and how wherever in the six realms we try to make ourselves comfortable, however hard we try, it's never quite going to work. But let's just look for briefly at the first two. And you've probably all come across this teaching in the tradition. It talks in terms of just how difficult it is to find a human life, and one where you're in good shape and you're in contact with the Dharma and you have everything that you need in order to practice. And then, with the second one, there will be reminders that the time of death is uncertain. And that at the time of death, all that's going to be of any use to us is the state of our awareness and the positive karma that we've accumulated. So taking all that kind of for read, although maybe we shouldn't take it too much for read, because that second one about impermanence is, it's weird, isn't it? I often say, life is totally uncertain. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. We don't know what's going to happen next week. We certainly don't know what's going to happen next year. There's only really one thing which we can be sure of about the whole of life, and that is that we're going to die. That is the one piece of certainty that we have, and yet that's the one thing which we don't want to look at. So, that's death is the elephant under the carpet of our lives. But actually, if we could dig it out from under the carpet, you know, elephants are very strong, steady, powerful beasts, and we would actually have a lot more we'd have one piece of information that we could be sure of to build our lives on. So these two, they need to sort of come together. Yeah. We have a real opportunity, but we have to make the most of it because, you know, it has an expiry date. And unfortunately, nowhere in the small print can we find where the expiry date is. Yeah, so we don't know when the expiry date is. So we better use it now. We better enjoy it now. We better make the most of it now. And all these Dharma teachings, they're all antidotes to particular kinds of suffering. So depending on how our mental state is, we may need more of one or more of the other. So if we're in a very low mental state, we're feeling quite down on ourselves and so on, then we probably don't need to go, and we're all going to die. Similarly, if we're ebullient, but that's probably not a very good word in the second language. If it's very kind of bouncy and energetic and full of itself and full of I could do this and I could do that and woof and lots of thought chains, well, maybe sobering it down a little bit with the awareness of impermanence would be a good thing. So we need to be skillful with how we work with these two, but we do need, or it's really helpful at least, to keep coming back to these. In some forms of Buddhism, you know, they form really quite a basis. You know, they're called in Tibetan Buddhism, they're also often called the four common preliminaries. So you're really encouraged to kind of reflect on these. I remember in very early on in my Buddhist life, I was up in Semuling in Scotland, and I got put in an attic room for 3 days to do a little sort of solitary retreat. And I had this little booklet written by Kalu Rinpoche, one of the main teachers of their tradition. And it was all about these four reminders. And I remember, you know, just really working with those for 3 days and coming away totally depressed, actually, it has to be said, because I didn't have enough positive emotion to really kind of reflect on that. But I do sometimes think that in that tradition, there is something, people who have just kept on contemplating and reflecting on these, there is a certain level of motivation that comes through. You know, they have sort of, it's become more second nature for people to think of this life is a real opportunity and it won't last very long. Really sort of accustomed, you know, that's become part of their view. And I think it's good for it to be part of the view of any Dharma practitioner because that is the existential situation. So basing ourselves on how things really are is a recipe for happiness rather than not doing that, which is a recipe for suffering. So, a sense of the preciousness of human life, in a way, often starts just with, or a very good way into it, is just cultivating some sense of gratitude. Not, I was brought up in a Catholic tradition where, you know, I really ought to be grateful that Christ died to save me, you know, from eternal hell and all that. So I always felt like I was being made to feel grateful, and I resisted and resisted and resisted. But there's a really positive, healthy appreciation of our current situation, along with everything which has helped to bring us here. So out of all the billions of people on the planet, lots of them have never even heard anything about the Dharma and the path to awakening and enlightenment. But we have. We had that great good fortune. Not only that, we've followed it through to this point. And some days we will really appreciate that. Some days we won't. But we can still, there's always, by comparing our situation to how things could have been, or the situation that some other people are in, there's quite a sense of gratitude there. In fact, I found cultivating a sense of gratitude for quite simple things, just like a bowl of muesli in the morning, is quite a deep Dharma practice. Firstly, it makes me aware of all the conditions that had to come together for that bowl of muesli to be there. It involved thousands and thousands of people, directly or indirectly. From the people who grew the oats to the people who laid the roads, up here so that the muesli could be delivered, and so on. There's a vast net of sort of interconnections. And it also really helps me not take things for granted. Again, it helps with that sort of freshness. So similarly we can cultivate gratitude just for very simple things. They don't all have to be huge. But the more gratitude there is, the more joy there is. And if I really appreciate everything that went into that bowl of muesli, or everything that went into all of us coming together here in Adhisthana, from everyone who taught us everything along the way, to all the conditions that had to come together for 66 of us to meet in this way, then I really value it and I really appreciate it, and I really enjoy it. And that sense of joy and enjoyment is so important for Dharma practice. I think sometimes, as we have it as beginners, we find the Dharma and it's extraordinary and we get really excited and really, we feel so grateful that these big sort of life-changing teachings can come to us, and we start to practice meditation and, we find that however we find it, but we start to practice the Dharma life. But then as we've been doing it for years and years, it gets a little bit more habitual, and also we start bumping into some of those deeper kleshas that I was talking about this morning, and we, at times we're sort of struggling more, and we lose that sense of context, and we lose that sense of joy, which would actually help us in our struggle with the kleshas, So we can sometimes just end up, feeling like, oh, I'm really having to work on this, and oh, that's still not good enough, and oh dear, I should really be doing more than I'm doing, and at the same time, I should be doing less than I'm doing, and on and on and on. And just that simple, sense of joy in being alive and joy in being able to take an easy breath, and that joy of, having found the Dharma to be able to do this at all, gets lost. So we need to keep coming back to that. The more that sense of joy is there, the more we'll sort of sail through the difficulties. We just focus on what's not right in about our Dharma life, because there's always something not right because we're not enlightened. So without forgetting about that, in a way we need to keep a strong sense of, okay, there's further to go, but isn't it amazing that we've come this far. Isn't it amazing that we've been helped in so many ways? Isn't it amazing that we can do this now? Okay, let's do a little bit of meditation.